Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back after an unfortunate week off where we should probably start off by apologizing by not being readily available to you, but we thank you so much for being here for UFC 263. Adesanya versus Vettori 2. And I mean, I cannot wait. I say this all the time, man. I cannot wait. This card is absolutely stacked top to bottom. Figueiredo Moreno 2. We've got Nate Diaz returning versus Leon Pokey in the Eye Edwards.
And that's Nathan Diaz to you.
And listen, we have the possible finale fight of Damian Maia versus Bilal Muhammad. You know, we've seen a lot of vets get put down here in 2021. Could this be another one?
Oh, man. Nothing is off the table at this point based on what I've seen recently in MMA.
And I got to be honest, anyone can. This is going to be, I will be in attendance. I'm flying. I have never been to a live UFC event before. I cannot wait. I hear that it is the best sport to witness live. I am, like I said, excited doesn't really put it into words. I really can't even believe that I'm going to be there.
Man, the guru in the house, Arizona, going to be sweating a little bit, I imagine, in your off time.
19,000 people sold out. I mean, sweating will be an understatement.
Yeah, man, but damn, you're right. The energy is going to be there. Did you see the press conference? These guys are ready to go. Man, I can't imagine how much fun it's going to be for you. I'm very happy you get to get out there. You've been a fan a little bit longer than I have, so maybe in due time I'll get out to my own event. Who knows?
Yeah, I feel bad because Izzy's your favorite fighter, so I wish we were kind of experiencing it together. We usually do try to watch the fights together, especially the pay-per-views. So I know I'll be missing you by my side, but you know I'll have you for 264, hopefully, for McGregor Poirier.
For sure, man. And we do have some big news about a guest for that card coming up. And unfortunately, we did have to have a last second cancellation on a surprise guest for last week. So unfortunately, due to emergency, we did have to push things off. We will apologize, in person in the future. But we're very excited to bring this episode for the pay-per-view UFC 263. We might as well get it popping because this first fight, it might get a little sloppy.
It's getting sloppy. It's call it Sloppy Joe Tuesday because we're getting sloppy in here.
Carlos Felipe.
Extra sloppy.
Carlos Felipe.
Billy Madison? What is that?
Because he's back in school, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we got the slop fest. Carlos Felipe versus Jake Collier. And actually, as much as we joke around about it, these are probably two of the higher skilled and better gas tank heavyweights on the roster in the UFC.
And younger heavyweights.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Collier was out of the game for a little bit, but he's still only 32 years old. And, he moved up from middleweight, which, I'd love to know, the full story behind it. But I got to say, after his first performance against a future top five in Aspinall, first round knockout, making his heavyweight debut. Jay Collier did have a win last time out, looking very good in a unanimous decision against John Volante. So take that as you will. But Volante does pack some pop, and Collier was able to eat it, at least in that fight. Felipe, on the other end of things, we've seen if you don't grapple him, he is a very talented striker. His loss to Sergey Spivak, we saw a lot of that came from his deficiencies in the grappling aspect, but I don't know how much he's really going to have to worry about that here with Jake Collier. He has done some BJJ and everything, so maybe we could see some wrestling, and maybe if he can get a takedown, you could see Felipe have some difficulties. But Felipe also is a very talented striker. It's just while he looked great against, Yorgan De Castro, against Justin Taffa, I mean, I really don't think he should have gotten that decision win, and that's kind of concerning, isn't it, Guru?
Yeah, I would say that one was suspect at best. It really wasn't a
a great showing for Felipe, who got outstruck by 9 strikes total. You know, was not nearly as accurate, 58-54%. Listen, especially at heavyweight, I like a bigger guy. So if I can get a little bit more reach and a little bit more height with Collier and decent dog odds, you know, I've been looking to fade Carlos Felipe because I don't think he's that good. Could that end up burning me? Yeah, I think it's possible. But, man, betting on Carlos Felipe is building a house on quicksand, because I just don't – I don't know. At least he can have a huge upside in his career. But right now, I don't know. It remains to be seen. You know, the win against Jorgen De Castro doesn't even look as good, because we've seen how, you know, bad Jorgen De Castro really is.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was overly impressed. And as someone who laid a decent amount on Felipe at minus 200 his last time out against Tafa, I was heavily sweating that decision, and I wouldn't have been surprised to see it go to Tafa. On the other hand, Collier, he lands 120 strikes when he beats Jean Valente, shows a nice array of leg kicks, good distance management as far as when the fight moved along. Maybe not as much early on, but Collier did show the ability to take a punch in that fight and really compose himself. You know, he suffered a little cut, but he really seemed to power through and really set the pace from there on out. He's got wins by knockout, submission, decision in his career in the UFC. You know, no submissions, but against a guy like Felipe, is it really that far out of the question? However, you just look at the line straight up. And I actually jumped on this one a little bit earlier in the week, going against some of the stuff that I would normally do. But right now, Collier is sitting at plus 144. And, you know, a little bit earlier on, I think I got him at plus 160.
Yeah, you can't hate the getting in on your side early, especially at heavyweight, when you don't really have to worry as much about a weigh-in, because no, I don't think anybody's ever missed weight at heavyweight before in the UFC. So I certainly like it. I guess maybe if I had any leanings, I do think it's sloppy, and I don't think anybody gets finished per se. So I think I like fight goes the distance. Will the fight go the distance? Yes, minus 136. Not horrible, parlayable. I don't know if I'd play it straight up.
Now that's on FanDuel, right?
Yeah. What was it on DraftKings?
Yeah, because when I was looking on DraftKings, they actually had a little bit more expensive line for the fight to go the distance. So I'm curious if it moved at all, because I mean, to go the distance is minus 152. So there's definitely some value if you're looking at FanDuel right now as far as the fight goes the distance. And honestly, that's what I think it does. So I would actually definitely recommend that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, sometimes, like we've said, I do think that they do specific matchups to kick off a card, and they want it to be exciting. But I think this card's going to be exciting enough that they kind of got to put this heavyweight matchup somewhere. One concern I do have with betting this over very quickly, and it's something I don't believe we touched on last time we had a pay-per-view. Well, maybe we did. The crowd noise. I do think that that adds something, that it can bring finishes. Like, I remember in, like, the just the sound from the TV in Tampa. Remember that Tampa card, that first, the Masvidal-Usman card? Like, that card was like, it had like this magic in the air. And
yeah, what were there, like, 6 finishes in a row to end the card or something like that?
Just something crazy like that, exactly. So I do wonder, in a fight like this, in an atmosphere like that, is it possible that they do something crazy? Yeah, I do think it's possible, but
yeah, so I definitely recommend being responsible with that one. If you really feel good about it, maybe see if the line comes down a little. Maybe people do bet on a finish. And if you can get a better line, great. But yeah, I would say, I mean, my play there is going to be Collier on the straight up on the money line. But if it gets below like plus 125, it might not be worth it at that point. So let's go on to our next fight. We got Fariseum versus Luigi Vendramini. There's going to be a decent size differential. ZM coming in at 6'1 and Vendramini at 5'8. ZM also has a 2-inch reach advantage. And he's going to be 2 years younger here. He does have 4 more fights total in his career than Vendramini does. And a lot of that is because of the injuries that Vendramini has suffered.
Yeah, a very serious knee injury, right? Or 2 ligaments in the same knee or something like that?
Yeah, the ACL, I think he recovered, re-injured. And, you know, it's been a very frustrating, you know, return. And maybe some stuff with his shoulder. That also happened in his last fight. So he wasn't able to come back as fast as he wanted to. He's moved camps a couple times, too, from Constrictor Team, Team Alpha Male. Now he's at Factory X. But he is a black belt. Been training since 12 years old, and also a quote-unquote Muay Thai black belt. So take that for what you will. But a French kickboxing champion, K1 Sanda, K1 European champion, Fariseum, and also a little bit of wrestling in his back pocket. But, yeah, that win over Malarkey is as sketchy as it gets.
That Malarkey fight was really interesting. It goes into this new category of judging and this new category of watching MMA unfold in front of our eyes, where we're seeing whether how judges score takedowns without damage, you know, without moving position, without moving to an advantageous position, like almost stalling in a way. Like, what are you going to do to wrestling without, like I said, without damage? And I think you saw in that fight that they didn't, you know, I guess 2 of the judges, whatever, didn't credit Malarkey for the couple minutes of control time, I believe, I guess, in that third round. I'd have to double check the scorecards on MMADecisions.com to make sure. But I believe that third round was probably the diciest one.
Yeah, I guess the way I would put it is that, you know, Vendramini comes in with 5 knockouts and 4 submissions and 1 knockout loss on his record. Someone that hasn't ever been to the distance. ZM, 2 decision wins, 1 decision loss, but has 11 different finishes, 2 losses and 9 wins in his career. I think this is one of those tricky ones where a lot of people think there might be a finish and it's possible we could see this go the distance.
That's kind of what I was thinking and kind of what I saw earlier in the week. I think it might just be too easy to just say, oh, ZM's been choked out twice by rear naked choke, so now Luigi Vendramini is going to get the submission. Like, yeah, it's possible, but like, hold your horses. You know, those 2 submissions came in 2016. He hasn't been finished since. And what you saw versus Jamie Malarkey, at least what I saw on some level, he was able to, counter and move in a lot of different ways. That actually were somewhat impressive. I know he spent a lot of time on his back when he really couldn't move. Especially to end that fight where he reversed position and ends on top and stays on top. He does have some of his own wrestling ability. He does have some takedown ability. And I do like the fact that he is taller and longer than Luigi Vendramini, who is probably going to want to strike anyway.
Yeah, I don't know how great the wrestling of Vendramini is, even though he has his black belt with BJJ. So being the smaller guy here might be a little difficult to get the takedown. But then again, you know, ZM, he's shown, you know, to get controlled. I really don't have a strong play here. If you ask me who I'm going to take for this fight, I feel like Vendramini might have a little bit of a brighter future. And losing by a flying knee to, you know, Zaleski Dos Santos in your debut, you know, that isn't the worst thing on your record. Whereas losing to Don Madge in your debut, not quite as exciting an opponent. Yeah, so if you asked me who I was going to take, I would say Vendramini might have a little bit of a brighter future. And I would say that, you know, as a little bit of an underdog, if you're feeling crazy, go for it. I'm just not going to touch this one.
I would agree with you. I do think that Luigi does have the brighter future. I was like, after watching him, the way he knocked out Jessen Aria, whatever that guy's name is, I was like, oh my God, I was so excited. I'm like, when do we get to see this kid fight again? And it's obviously, it's been like 8 months.
So maybe it's matchup problems. Maybe he was getting healthy. I'm certainly excited to see him. I don't know. There's something in me that likes Frost right now. I don't know what it is. That is kind of where I lean at the moment. I feel like I'm going to eat my words. I feel like he's going to miss weight or something. I don't know what it is. But we'll see. I lean ZM at the moment.
Okay.
No real bets, like you said.
Yeah.
I guess if we had to pick a prop, I would think.
I mean, you don't have to.
Oh, we have to. Listen, ZM by points plus 210, or even Vendramini plus 360. I mean, both of those are pretty damn juicy because they really don't think it's going the distance. Fight will go the distance minus 104. So that's like, to me, that's even a little weird because that's like a decent number, mind you, where I think I would place it. But based on everything that I've heard and based on the props being so high for points, that's not really what they think. I just, right? I mean, usually when you see an even money to go the distance, you see like a plus 150 for that person to win by decision or something.
Well, I think to your point, looking at those lines, it really just shows that they don't have their mind made up with how the fight's going to go. And I think that kind of plays into why I'm saying I don't want to touch it, because there is a high level of variability. And I don't think whatever play you make is really going to be a high percentage one.
Yeah, this is definitely a huge high volatility fight because these guys are inexperienced. And like I'm saying, with a crowd, they could pop off. Like they could really show up to fight. So,
yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, in our next fight here, we have another young prospect facing a guy that, you know, has definitely been around the UFC for a little bit. Chase Hooper, Ben Askren's son, maybe estranged at this point because, like, he kind of didn't bring him to the Jake Paul fight. So, like, I don't know. I saw that Chase Hooper was a little upset about that on Instagram.
He's probably trolling. He's probably
just... Yeah, nah, definitely. I'm just kidding. But anyway, so Chase Hooper, 10-1-1 in his career. He's 2-1 in the UFC, one knockout win, one submission, and one decision loss. Steven Peterson, 2-3 in the UFC, one knockout win, one decision win, three decision losses. I mean, Peterson is 10 years older. Peterson's got two more fights in the UFC, and he came off of Dana White's Contender Series, actually. So the thing that I was noticing is that Chase Hooper has had a pretty marked grappling advantage in most of his wins.
Yeah.
And he's got a black belt now. He did upgrade, level up in between, and he's training with, you know, Steven Thompson now. So, you know, I'm sure he'll be high-level karate when we see him out there. Steven Peterson out of Fortis, he's got a brown belt, BJJ, so I'm not really too concerned about him on the mat here. I think just his level of experience and, yeah, you know, sure, we could see something crazy happen, but he hasn't ever lost by submission, and he has 7 submission wins on his record. So it's not like I'm concerned about him losing by sub. And 8 decision losses? I mean, does Hooper out-grapple him for the majority of the fight? I don't really see that.
One thing I see that's super interesting is that Chase Hooper is actually 10% more accurate with his striking than Steven Peterson. That's not good. That's really, really, really concerning to me. I was really, really shocked to see that.
Right, but the striking defense for Chase Hooper is 38%, and the striking defense, so that's 18 percentage points worse than Steven Peterson's defense. So overall, Chase Hooper's got like a negative 8% differential
for sure. Listen,
in his striking.
But we know that he can't strike, and we've seen him get better ish as he's gone.
Yeah, well, I mean, he throws some volume, 4.4 strikes landed per minute, so it's not like he's not going out there and trying. I mean, he even landed 53 strikes on Caceres, who doubled him up.
Yeah, I mean, Caceres is legit. They both have losses to Caceres.
Well, definitely. I mean, that was a huge step up at that point for Hooper, and I don't think it was really appropriate. But
he was losing that Barrett fight, right? He had lost the first two rounds, or was it 1-1? I didn't really get to rewatch
I had thought that he was on his way to losing a decision, probably 29-28, and then he gets the heel hook late in round three.
So that's interesting.
I mean, he was winning the striking battle technically, just having 57 landed strikes, but he landed 7% less accurate than Barrett and went 0 of 6 on his takedown. So it was like Barrett was having a much more successful game plan. He just got really sloppy near the end. So I really think that that would be like the same type of way that Peterson loses here, is if he gets sloppy, because, I mean, he does have 9 losses on his record, so it's not like he's beneath losing.
He's definitely not afraid to lose a fight. I don't know. It's and I do agree with what you said, and you're probably going to be right, but Chase Hooper by submission – or by decision plus 380. I mean, if you like Hooper here,
you have to play submission.
His props are like Hooper. How about double chance?
How does he win a decision here?
What?
How does he win a decision?
I don't know. I guess you're right. It has to be a finish, right?
Because he's a great grappler. He's not a good wrestler. Yeah, he's got a rubber chin, so I don't know that he gets knocked out. I mean, spinning back fist KO for Steven Peterson against Bravo, but Hooper, he's got like that young.
It's been a fresh... You know what? That's interesting, dude. I didn't check Peterson's his Instagram or anything. He hasn't been in the octagon since September 2019. He sat out all of COVID. Where is this guy?
That is a good point.
It's
so
been
that,
nearly 2 years. He could be very slow.
Listen, so that's where I say, listen, I'm leaning one way, and then you give me a detail like that, and I'm like, you know what? I should just stay away. There's a lot of fights on this card, and there's a lot of places where you can make some money, and I don't know that this is necessarily one of them.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, but if you ask me who I'm picking, I'm going to go with Peterson. And it's pretty much even money. It's like minus 118 and minus 104. Peterson, the slight favorite.
I feel so bad not picking Hooper. I really like the guy. I actually did like Steven Peterson coming up with his Superman tattoo. I don't remember what fight of his I liked. Maybe it was the Bravo fight. I don't know. Losses to Brandon Davis. Benito Lopez. I mean, even at his best, he wasn't even. He beat Ray Rodriguez twice, who we know. He beat Irwin Rivera, who we know. Anybody else there? Nah. Yeah. Okay. I guess I slightly lean Peterson, but I don't know. I do really like Hooper. He's the kind of kid and the kind of fighter that at that age, at 21 years old, you can see leaps and bounds of change fight to fight. Like, you know, an indescribable amount of change if he's in the right camp or if he's learning properly. So,
I think he is training with a good group of guys with the Thompsons. So I wouldn't put it past seeing a good development in a striking game. And obviously he's willing to mix it up. It's just about his ability to. So, let's stay away and learn a little bit more about each guy in this fight. That's how I feel.
Yeah, definitely a good learning experience for early in this card, where there's, like you said, a ton of fights, and it just gets better and better, man. I'm frothing at the mouth to keep going here.
Yeah, dude. All right, so I think I actually might have a play on this next fight, which is kind of crazy. We got Matt Frivola versus Terrence McKinney, making a late notice step up here, and coming off of a fight. I mean, how long ago? What was it like? 10 days, 13 days ago?
Yeah, I think it's...
LFA?
Yeah, it was LFA versus Michael Ortiz, June 4th. What's today? The 12th? The 10th. So, 6 days ago.
Yeah, and damn it. I mean, so this isn't the first time we saw McKinney either. He did have a fight a little while ago against... Sean Woodson on Contender Series, and that was a highlight reel finish for Sean Woodson.
Flying knee, it was brutal.
And it was a second round flying knee. And so the first round, completely controlled by McKinney, lands the takedown, you know, some strikes from bottom from Woodson and all that. But I think we really saw his wrestling skills. And for Vola, talk about wrestling skills. I mean, he held his own against Sarukian.
The steamroller.
Yeah, I mean, we thought, you know, the steamroller might get finished against Sarukian, but he stood in there and held his own on like a one-day notice opponent change, right, essentially.
Yeah, that was a really weird fight, and they didn't give him any credit in the betting market from my memory. And we did feel, you and I think I even put Sarukian in a parlay. We did feel that Sarukian was going to win, but that we felt that they were a little wide.
Yeah.
And, I guess at the end of the day, when you win as you're expected to, it doesn't really matter how wide the line is. You won and you did what you were supposed to. But yeah, you're right. He did have a good accounting of himself there.
Definitely. I think he's good in scrambles, everything like that. So for Vola, I was kind of interested in playing him originally against Camacho. Now you're telling me that for Vola, -260? And if you go over to DraftKings, I think you actually even get a wider line, -305. So that means McKinney's +235 on DraftKings.
Oh, wow.
I think there's a lot of value there.
-260 is a lot of value. You have to play that now.
No. I think you misheard. +235, Terrence McKinney.
Wait, what? You like Terrence McKinney?
There could be some juiciness in that value there. I think this fight could be explosive. I think it could end quickly. And I think the volatility that it could be either side here. I think McKinney is definitely a high level wrestler. I don't think Frivola is the best striker, although he's willing. And I think that this could be really close and a lot more interesting. We saw last week two out of the three fighters that were stepping up on like a week's notice, especially off of like a high performance on LFA, that they really showed out. And, we did have one of them lose, but it showed that, you know, in this new day and age, you know, a short notice opponent, depending on exactly where they're fighting, it could be interesting. You know, McKinney is actually going to have a size advantage and he's a switch stance, whereas Frivola,
I think, to more of your point though, with two of the three last week, which is I just think that that's rare. I don't think it happens very often, and I think maybe last week's a little bit of, you know, some good matchups too. You've seen Frivola. He trains at a good gym. You've seen him fight Sarukian, Pena, Turner. To your point, I mean, a flyer on McKinney, that knockout by Polo Reyes is like, that's like the scariest thing on your resume. All Polo Reyes really does have is that little knockout power, but I mean, you don't want to see that. So, but that was, you know, 3 years ago. He's racked up some wins since then, two wins, the draw to Venata. Yeah, I get the shot. I can't hate it. I don't know anything stylistically enough about McKinney to know if there's any sort of matchup or any sort of advantage in that respect.
Yeah,
I think 3 inches of reach advantage. For McKinney, and a height, an inch of height. That's interesting. That makes me kind of lean your way a little bit.
And then my other thing is that McKinney was a contender series guy. So it's not like we're talking about someone that the UFC didn't even have on their radar and they were just like, hey, we need you to lose like this week. Like McKinney
had a fight scheduled.
He was 7-1 and he was -275 against Sean Woodson when he lost by flying knee. They've been trying to find a way to get him back in the UFC, and he didn't have to go back on Contender Series.
He lost to Derek Minner by first round sub.
Yeah.
After that Woodson fight, and we all know Derek Minner.
Yeah, I mean, that's as high level as he gets grappling. And it was a triangle choke. So it goes to show you that he is wrestling heavy. He gets the early takedown, and he gets choked out with a triangle at 57 seconds in the first round. Frivola's not throwing up a triangle on him, so I'm not worried about that. And if he does, he'll be more prepared this time.
I mean, to your point, I don't know. Frivola has a
arm triangle choke win against Luke Flores on the Dana White Contender Series.
Arm triangle, not triangle. Leg triangle. The
okay, that's an interesting point.
His last three fights, 16 seconds in round one, stoppage from strikes back in March. Then in April, round one head kick, 16 seconds into the fight. And then on June 4th, this past weekend, round one knockout by punches, 1 minute and 12 seconds in. See, so McKinney's dying. Yeah.
3-2, 10-4, 12-3. I don't know how good these guys are.
Well, but that's much better than, you know, facing guys like generally in a buildup, you see like 2-3, 0-0, you know.
3-2 is basically that. So.
Well, yeah, but then 10-4 and 12-3. Right, I mean, and they're both in LFA. So those are much more impressive as far as that goes because both of those guys have more experience than him, too. But yeah, listen, I'm not recommending to go out and make a huge play. Like I put 20 on Collier, say I put 10 on McKinney, but I just think like plus 235 is a little bit too wide in this spot.
Yeah, listen, I understand it, especially when we know how much volatility there is in fights. We've seen people step in on short notice and come in and win. And yeah,
how would you line Sean Woodson against Frivola? You know, like that's kind of an interesting point because McKinney was minus 2-something against him there. And Frivola, what would you say? You know, so like Woodson did have an impressive win, but that whole first round he was getting controlled. Yeah, so I'm not recommending to go crazy here, but and I might even like say like my prediction is Frivola to win. But when you're saying like percentage wise that if you get, you know, McKinney to win is like a 30% chance, like I think it's probably a little bit better than that. So it's worth throwing like a little baby bet on it.
Yeah. Listen, and Frivola's never exactly been my favorite fighter in the entire universe. So sure. I Terrence McKinney, a finisher, comes in about as exciting as anybody. I certainly was excited to watch him fight in LFA when I knew that he was coming to fight. So yeah, let's move along.
Definitely. So in our next fight here, we have Pani Kianzad versus Alexis Davis, someone that actually helped us make a little bit of money not too long ago against Sabina Mazo.
That was a great pick by you, sir.
Yeah. Chronic Combat, shout him out. We were all over that one. So in this fight, I think it's a little bit different than the Sabina Mazo fade spot. Kianzad's got a little bit more experience. She's 13-5. She's definitely taken her lumps, 2 submission losses in her career. One of those coming in the UFC, to Macy Shison of all people. She also lost to Julia Avila by unanimous decision, but her wins recently, a little bit more impressive, Jessica Rose Clark, decision. Betch Cohea, decision. Sajara Eubanks, decision. So I don't necessarily see Kianzad being able to get a finish outside of some scar tissue breaking up on Alexis Davis and maybe a cut stoppage. But yeah, I think she's a little bit more athletic and she's a stronger base than Mazo and takes less risks in that regard. But if Davis is able to get her down, that's going to be for the rest of the round.
And that's why I kind of want to pick against Kianzad here. Like I do like Penny, and I think if she keeps it standing and Davis like can't get it to the ground at all, she's in trouble. She's just going to, I could just see her getting pieced up for 15 minutes, but with the threat, with the possibility, with the chance that she could trip, that she could stumble, you could catch a kick. It's possible this fight goes to the ground. And if Kianzad's on her back, I do not think that she's able to get up.
I definitely agree with that. Listen, the line's all over. Over 2.5 is minus 360. So if you think this fight goes the distance, just save your money. It's probably not worth it. They're all over it. Kianzad by decision, minus 134. Alexis Davis by decision, though, plus 325. Isn't that interesting?
Exactly. So I think when it, if it goes to decision, shit, it's like 50-50 these days with the judges. So why not? Why not maybe get like an Aaliyah Latifi type win here with Alexis Davis, where she spends two rounds sitting on top, maybe doesn't get as not enough strikes off to do much damage, but who knows?
-205 I think that's really irresponsible if you like Kianzad, just given that I don't think her grappling will be enough to like save her from the top control of Davis. But I also don't trust Davis to land the initial takedown outside of Kianzad like messing up somehow. And she's a little bit more boxing oriented than a person like Mazo, who's like head kicks are like her number one asset. Nah. And like really long legs and all that. So it like makes it easier to get takedowns.
I hate to be rude, but in a card full of bangers, this is probably, you know, your smoke break of the night.
Yeah, I think it's just so predictable that it's going to end up going to decision at the end of it.
It will. It will go decision. And after this, though, it's really nothing but flames. So, I don't know. I'm kind of way independent. I want to see how everybody looks faced off against each other. Alexis Davis is generally somebody that does look good at weigh-ins. 36 years old. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
listen,
tough.
2 inches of reach.
Less but she's given up an inch of height.
Yeah, but, you know, lower to the ground, drives, yeah. Taller, harder to stay upright, whatever. She's not a great wrestler like that in terms of, you know, offensive. Again, say I'm going to save my money for just, I wouldn't say more bets, just, I guess, just bigger bets.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, hey.
It's tough when we're five fights in and there's nothing we've loved yet, so that's tough.
Let's get to one that we really liked.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. So,
our
talk
dog
about,
of the day.
Yeah, talk about a really exciting fight. I think that this is, like, one of the best prospect matches that the UFC's put together in a little bit.
I really cannot wait. I'm not sure when we're going to go to the stadium. I'm not sure what we've decided, whether we're going to be there from the exact start of the first fight or whatever, but I know for sure my absolute limit. I must be in the stands by the time this fight is on. That's my personal limit.
So we got Movsar Evliev versus Hakeem Dawodu. This is going to be a hell of a fight. I don't think we're going to see Dawodu yelling about not being there and running away and getting yelled at by Kevin Sataki to stop cursing. You can't do that, Hakeem. You keep it real, or I forget what he said. It was like, dude, you got to chill out. Like, let the guys yell at each other a little bit. Like, come on. So, man, 14-0 for Evliev, 12-1-1 for Dawodu.
Evliev, his last beat, time out. Man. Oh. I don't think there's anybody I would feel comfortable fading Evliev. Like, if Evliev, like, does dominate here, I don't know what happens. I don't know who's
going
to do.
I guess, man, because, like, if you were going to give him a tough striking matchup, I think Dawodu is one of the only guys right now that has the athleticism and the diverse striking at this type of level on the rankings to really keep up with Evliev, because Evliev is a good
not
striker.
Not only that, but he's got the 85% takedown defense. I've heard some people tweet saying like, oh, that 85% is going to be lower by the end of this weekend. And it might be, but I think this guy's a beast, man. I think he's athletic. I think he's got the ability to keep it standing. I think he's got the technical ability.
Yeah, listen, he didn't look great losing by round one sub to Danny Henry in his debut. But Dawodu has definitely made huge strides since then. Just in his last fight against Zubaira Tukhugov, you know, with Khabib in his corner, 1 of 7 on takedowns when Tukhugov in his career, 46%. And that went down because of that fight.
Wow. And that's so, really 46%. I know that may not sound a lot. Listen, if you're listening to our podcast, you probably know that 46% is a good number. But to reiterate, 46%, while it may not sound very good, that's very good for takedowns.
Well, just for comparison's sake, I mean, okay, would you say Evliev is a better wrestler than Zakugov? Just like
probably.
Okay, so he's got a 37% takedown accuracy. Right.
So what people sometimes don't remember or really think about is when that's a major part of your game plan, you're shooting for more and more of them, so chances are you're not as accurate. But then you see somebody like Usman who's just like incredible. What's his number? His number is like probably the highest of anybody's.
I will tell you in a second, just because my curiosity is getting the best of me here. 48%.
Wow. So Steven still not like, you know, that's still, you know, you'd think, oh, it's not even that high, but that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking someone down almost half the time that you try to, that's impressive.
Exactly.
Because you're talking about the high-level takedown defense starts at about 75% or so. I mean, like Khabib, 48% takedown accuracy. That tells you all you need to know. So, okay, Evliev, a slight step down as far as his efficiency on takedowns, but that doesn't mean that he isn't a high-level wrestler. And about his grappling, I mean, he'll leave his neck in the worst positions, but that dude is not concerned at all when someone wraps up a guillotine. It is crazy. I don't know how he gets out of these. But okay, so let's take a deeper dive. Let's take a deeper dive into the takedown numbers of Evliev. He faces Sungwoo Choi. Goes 5 of 16 on takedowns for 31%. And we're talking about Choi being a guy that, you know, gets taken down by a stiff breeze, blah, 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 blah. Wow. He actually stuffed 69% of the takedowns on a high volume in that fight. Then you see Evliev against Enrique Barzola.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off, but yeah, Choi ended up not only improving his takedown defense, but showed incredible takedown offense versus Yusuf Zalal in a fight that we got burned on.
Yeah. And okay, so Evliev, 4 of 11 against Barzola. Yeah, that's a lot better. Then he faces Mike Grundy. He doesn't even attempt a takedown. In fact, he gets taken down 6 out of 15 times for 40%. That's actually pretty good for Grundy there. And you know, he wins on the feet.
And not to mention that he Barzola actually outstruck Evliev.
Yes.
So and that's super weird
finally,
to jump back
finally,
to that.
Evliev, 2 of 2 against Nick Lentz. But on those takedowns, both of them were submission attempts from Nick Lentz on the guillotine. Right. So.
And then Nick Lentz went on to retire.
Yes. And Nick Lentz also landed 7 leg kicks on Evliya for the time that they were standing. That's going to be important for a guy like Hakeem Dawodu. He's going to be throwing tons of leg kicks. He hurts almost all of his opponents with leg kicks. Evliya is heavy on the lead leg. He's a very good striker, very efficient. So, you know, we've taken all this time to, you know, kind of shit on his wrestling, and really all I do to say is that while it's high level, he lands 2.75 per 15, 37%, and his takedown defense is 70%, so it's like he's a very good wrestler, but I don't think he is as elite as his 14-0 record is making it out to be. And then when you take a look at his striking numbers, those are actually much more impressive to me than his grappling numbers, but I think it's because stylistically guys are you know, looking for that takedown. And when you go 79 strikes to 20 strikes against Mike Grundy, a guy that just is lost out there, and 82 to 46 against Nick Lentz, but then against guys that can really strike, you know, it's a lot closer. So 4.7 strikes landed per minute against 2.83 absorbed. That means a 44% accuracy and 64% defense for Evliev. I mean, this guy, his striking is better than his wrestling. But when you're facing Dawodu, that's someone that's actually bringing it from more angles. It's not as boxing oriented, much more kicks. And sure, that might skew the numbers for accuracy a little bit. But yeah, I just think that Dawodu is going to bring something that Evliev hasn't seen in the UFC so far. And I think that Dawodu actually faced someone with a little bit crisper striking in Takugov and a better wrestler in Takugov.
He's just way better than anybody that Evliev has fought. So when you take that into consideration and then you look at the line is priced as if he's not making a step up in competition when he very, very clearly is. So the real question becomes, if you're betting on Evliev, if Evliev's your pick this week, what happens if Evliev can't get the takedown? What happens if the opening round starts out and he stuffs that three of them. You know what I mean? He's just going to keep shooting. He doesn't, there is no plan B. So that's a huge problem. And I think Dawodu might be the guy to be able to exploit that.
So this is actually one of those moments where it's a little unfortunate that we recorded a little later in the week, because I fired away early on this. A few days ago, the line was +215 for Hakeem Dawodu. And currently at the moment on DraftKings, because that's where I placed it, is +188. So I got a little bit of line value. I caught it before some of the movement. And at the face-offs, I mean, Dawodu is going to be a little bit taller and a little bit longer. Not by much, but enough where some people are going to see the kind of shape he's in, because I saw it embedded. I mean, that guy's in great shape once again. And Dawodu, some more money might come in. So my recommendation, as you know, this will probably be released to you guys by the time you're seeing weigh-ins and stuff, but if you can catch it before it moves too far from +188, I would definitely recommend it. Dawodu is someone that I think can make this a great fight, and he could win any which way if he can keep this standing.
He's a huge, huge top prospect. I mean, and as so is Evloev, obviously. But, I mean, you even look at his win against Julio Arce before beating Tukhugov, who is also – both of those guys are young, hot, you know, up-and-comers. Julio Arce has a fight coming up. He was supposed to fight Timur Valiyev, and now he's fighting Andre Yule at the end of July. So, you know, these are guys – those are real names. I mean, I think Tukhugov or Arce versus Evloev are really good fights. So,
yeah, I saw it. Yeah, so I think that says it all. I mean,
I think it's just a mismatch. I think that there's a discrepancy in the line here. I think the Vegas is missing something.
I agree, and it seems like everyone is kind of saying that Evloev is a slam dunk, and maybe we end up with egg on our face, but we're taking a shot at like a +215 and now a +188 underdog for someone that's this high level and that big of a prospect. Like, his defense isn't Kevin Holland level, you know, like this guy knows how to get up and he knows how to stuff takedowns with proper technique and underhooks and getting the hand, you know, under the neck when someone's trying to get the good head position on a single leg. Like, Dawodu knows what he's doing in that regard. He has good footwork. It's a big octagon. We're not in a small cage. So I really like the shot. Let's get on to our next one here, because that one, oh man, that was so exciting. But now into another kind of big fight for the flyweight division here. Who could get a title shot off of this one? That's the question. Lauren Murphy versus Joanne Calderwood. I mean, JoJo. She definitely came back out last time after an embarrassing first round submission loss to Jennifer Maia and put it on Jessica Eye. But at that stage, what does that really say? Yeah, but what, I mean, what is that, you know, OnlyFans Jessica Eye? I mean, like, this is the stage of Jessica Eye that we're talking about. This isn't bulletproof vest, you know, before the Valentina loss. But so now we see Lauren Murphy. She comes off of, you know, the Andrea Lee split decision. That was close. Roxanne Modafferi, she won handily in that one. And then Shakurova, I mean, absolutely outclassed her, but that was a short notice opponent. You expect her to do that. I think what we've seen is a steady growth from Murphy. She's been working with the same nutritionist as Marvin Vettori, Matteo Capodaglio. He's definitely done a lot as far as the nutrition and getting Murphy into great shape. And I think it's really shown in the physicality in her last few fights. And I think her grappling keeps coming around now, a purple belt. JoJo is still a blue belt. And I think if this gets in the clinch, if this gets on the ground, and even if it stays at distance,
it's tough not to think Murphy's not going to be the stronger girl.
Yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah, you know, I want to point to striking accuracy numbers and defense numbers, but
it all goes to leg kicks. All,
yeah, you know? Agreed. This is a really, really tough fight. It's one that I don't necessarily have the biggest horse in the race on either side. God, you know, I yeah.
Dogger Pass, I like it. I kind of like it. I really do think Joanne Calderwood, I like that her husband's Mike Wood, the owner of Syndicate. So, you know, she's always working and she's always, you know, in the gym in that respect. She's got a gym lifestyle. But Lauren Murphy, man, it just might be her time. I think you said it to me earlier in the week. It's just like, it's just kind of like statement win time. Put this fifth win in a row. Secure yourself a title shot. You know, beat this contender, right? This is a title eliminator, no?
Definitely. But yeah, so I guess, I mean, I'm not going too crazy on it, but I did once again get a little bit of an early play in. And
well, what was the line you got?
Okay, so I got Lauren Murphy at plus 120.
It's still plus 120. That line has not moved.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like the sides are pretty much locked in as far as that goes. I do understand, you know, Calderwood has faced decent level of competition. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know that she gets a finish, obviously. And I think that Murphy is more game in more areas of MMA.
Yeah, I definitely think she's gotten a lot better. I think that the Chikagian fight is so weird. Murphy throws 35 strikes. Chikagian throws 45. That's so few. And then in the Calderwood fight, Calderwood throws 112. Or lands 112 and Chikagian 82.
It's just it's like half leg kicks.
Yeah.
Leg kicks, you know, so it's like, yeah, but they don't score. That, like, you can see she outlanded Chikagian, but she still lost.
Right.
You know, it's not like she's throwing ones that are crippling you. It's just like they're landing.
Interesting. It's interesting. It's a weird style. And I maybe you're right. The kind of peppering the steak kind of style is not going to really work against Murphy, who's going to be really hungry to come out and get this win, we're thinking.
Yeah, she's been calling out Valentina for a while. So I'll ride with Murphy here. Let's see how it goes. On to our next fight, a rematch, no contest in their last timeout. And I don't know how much really changes from what we saw in the last timeout. We got Eric Anders, your boy,
versus
Darren Stewart. And I mean, this fight's at 205 this time instead of 185. So we're going to see
what's
some
the deal
beefy
with that?
Boys.
Can you give me some details on that? You pointed that to me earlier in the week, and I didn't even realize that. So why is it?
Yeah.
What is
so
happening?
I guess they just wanted to run them back as soon as possible. And with Stewart taking like a decent amount of damage in
that fight.
Yeah, but like, you know, I think they kind of cobbled it together on a little bit shorter notice to kind of fill out the card here. And I think that, you know, maybe Stewart hasn't been able to train as much because he probably had to take some time off after all that damage. Mm. So, like, they probably had to agree to the 205. And, like, Anders is going to be beefy, man. And Stewart, I mean, like, he's going to be a little smaller, you know. It's tough to see it playing out much different. I think Stewart's still alive to hurt Anders, and Anders doesn't necessarily like being hit. But he showed the willingness to fight through it and get in the clinch and just wear on Stewart. So it's like, either way, I don't feel too comfortable making a play. And like, this fight already happened and we kind of saw what was going to happen. But it's like, there was like 20 seconds away from the round ending. So it's like, did Anders gas out? Like, was Stewart just going to be donezo? Like, would he have quit on the stool? Mm. Like, I don't necessarily think that. I think Stewart is a tough guy and everything. It's just I'm not running to place a bet. And like, honestly, if you ask me who I'm going to pick, I went with Stewart last time, and like, now he's an underdog. It's like, it's not like he had a complete shit fight.
And, he looked pretty shit.
I mean, he hurt Anders early, and then he gets put in the clinch and just gets like worn out. But like, yeah, I mean, sure, I probably lean Anders. Like, Stewart, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt. I'd like you said so perfectly. Was on Stewart last time, and in retrospect, it didn't look as good. I mean, I felt kind of bailed out.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I did feel kind of bailed out at the time. So not really rushing to jump back on a sinking ship.
Very excited to just watch the fights, be there. In this case, this is going to be an exciting fight one way or the other. Maybe, how about the under 2.5 plus 120? I don't know.
Yeah, I have a feeling that this one could be a little bit more boring than the first one. Could be a super clinch fest. Could be,
right,
you know, just not great. So I'm really just not trying to bet on this fight. I'll be honest with you guys. This is another one of those, like, it already happened. Like, the line completely flipped to where it should have been in the first place. And, you know, the value's probably sucked out.
Yeah, nothing. Neither of these guys are, to me, super dependable.
Nah, and so why even? You know, there's 14 fights on the card. We've already got a few nice.
Well, I just feel bad because we've passed like half of them. It's only 14 fights. You passed seven. The rest of this card's going to be beefy in terms of bets and sides, but yeah, just a tough start to the card. Very exciting though. So exciting.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't even say we necessarily passed on that many. I mean, there's a pick on the Collier fight.
True.
There's a pick on, you know, a small play on McKinney.
I like this, right? I like the Z.
You know, the Dawodu, Murphy. You know, we got some plays here. It's just like it used to be more of like I need to bet every single fight, and now I'm realizing, like, although I'm like, oh, my God, I need to bet every fight, like, sometimes I just want to enjoy the fight. And, like, this is one of those ones where, like, yeah, there's nothing like screaming to me, and I'm just going to be pissed off at myself for placing money on it, and like come back to it and be like, why am I betting on Anders versus Stewart? Why am I doing that? And you're like, why do I want to have that discussion after the fact? Just like, don't touch it. Like, and I hope that that's like a little bit of a lesson for anyone listening. Like, I don't know, not every fight has to be the one that you have to touch.
Agreed.
But fully agreed. I think this next one though, you had some great points on. So, Drew Dober versus Brad Riddell. I mean, talk about an exciting fight, but this is also one where I think that there's a pretty good angle on. And you know what? I think you introduced it to me, so I'm going to let you take it. How are you feeling on this? Dober versus Riddell.
Well, so the thing I saw about Riddell, other than the fact that he trains with Israel Adesanya, he's so quick, man. They don't call him Brad Quick with Riddell for nothing. I mean, he's really quick. Solid striking. Working on, you know, super technical. Working on getting better in terms of his ground game and takedown defense. So, you know, we've seen some improvements in that regard. But, you know, you watch him in his last fight versus Alex Da Silva. And he dropped that first round without a doubt. I mean, he gets pushed up. He gets
grappling.
He gets dropped. He's got to kind of crawl and shimmy his way to the fence. Lost for sure. Lost round one on the scorecards. And, you know, then Da Silva kind of, I don't know, gasses out and is, I don't know, just doesn't really implement, doesn't really throw any more strikes. And Riddell takes over for the next two. When you look at Drew Dober, I mean, he went on he had a 3-KO win streak before fighting the guy that absolutely nobody wanted to fight in Islam Makhachev. I mean, nobody wants to fight that guy. Khabib says he's the next champion. It's impossible to get Makhachev a decent matchup, which is why he's now fighting Thiago Moises. So I'm excited for that fight, but I don't think Moises really has much of a chance, honestly.
No, but to your point, who's the guy that Dober lost to before he lost to Makhachev, his last loss? Beneil Dariush. I mean, come on. What, talk about high level.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's had the high level losses. He trains at the much better gym, in my opinion, at Team Elevation. I think that City Kickboxing has, I don't know, I like Eugene and I like Izzy and all. I don't know. I think Eugene sniffs his own farts too much. They were like the hot shit. And then I think they just kind of, I don't know, they like the sound of themselves talking type of thing. They just kind of fell in love with themselves. And to me, there's all their fighters seem to have the same hole of like when they're put on their back, they can't seem to win. And I don't know if it's just a coincidence or not. But you look at Drew Doberman, he's trains with Gaethje. He's had some, not throughout his career, but right now he's got some incredible power. He seems to be at the apex of where he's going to be in terms of his
career. No. This fight's in Arizona. It's not at the apex.
Oh my God. I think he's at his peak in terms of at 32 years old. I really like Dober here. I think the line is close enough that you can play at money line. I think the line is close enough that if there's somebody you love, maybe it's parlayable. I do think Dober probably wins by decision plus 155, but man, oh man, Drew Dober by knockout plus 460 is so greasy. I mean, that's like double bacon with extra cheese kind of greasy.
Oh.
I mean, no kosher here at all. I mean, just super grease.
Yeah, man. Listen, so I like that play a lot. Dober, I think, is a little bit more well-rounded. He did have, a little bit of a wrestling background in high school. He also has his purple belt. And, I mean, getting choked out by Makhachev isn't necessarily something to be too upset about, but he does have 4 submission losses on his record, but he has 9 submission wins.
Yeah, Riddell has 1 submission loss. And if you look at Riddell has no submission wins on his resume. So it's not,
and he has 1 submission loss.
Exactly. So it is not, it's not an option for Riddell to have a submission here. And he's not going to use any wrestling, where you might be surprised and actually see Drew Dober secure a takedown here.
So in that regard, I mean, you want to talk about crazy plus 1200 for a Drew Dober submission. It's not that far out of the
realm. No, it's not.
He has more submissions than knockouts in his career.
I think it should be like plus 800 or 900 or something. Plus 1200 seems really high.
Yeah. I mean, even if you put like $2 and you got like, enough to go out for like a really cheap 2 for $20 at Applebee's and leave a really shitty tip,
Shout out Applebee's. I don't know. Yeah, listen, I guess that's fair. Dober's has a long career. He has 7 submission wins on his career, or 9 submission wins on his career. So when was his last UFC win by submission?
He only had 1 of them.
Only 1 against...
in his debut.
Jamie Varner.
Yeah.
And it, not his debut. That was his debut. It was his third fight. It was his win. His first win.
Oh, okay. Yes. My bad. You are correct. But listen, it's plus 1200 for a reason. So don't...
I don't think so.
And probably not.
I liked Dober. I liked Dober by probably decision, but I really like that knockout prop. And as at least a flyer, and let's be real. If you do like Dober, if you do like Riddell, the only bet is Riddell by decision plus 250. So
I feel you on that. I mean, pretty simple. Sounds like we're both on Dober. So let's get on to another banger.
Yeah, Dober is probably my strongest feeling of any of the fights so far, other than Dawodu.
Okay. I like
that. But Dawodu is more like a faith thing, like a faith in what we've read and what we see more than like really, I guess it's the same thing, right?
Well, that's why it's a different thing. Like when you have an underdog play versus a favorite you feel good about. You know what I mean? Like you still know in the back of your mind there's a good chance they lose, but you're playing percentages and you're hoping that like you can cash in on like possible.
Exactly. You just read my mind. You articulated that perfectly.
Yeah, I got you. So now talk about craziness. We got the non-Jewish Bear Jew.
Is Paul he not Craig. Jewish?
He is not Jewish. He just wanted a non-controversial nickname for whatever reason.
That's a very controversial nickname. What do you mean? Bear? How do you... Bear Jew? How are you going to be a bear
Jew because, and not be no, Jewish? Because it was from the fucking Inglourious Basterds, and I guess there's a bunch of conflict in Scotland or whatever, so like...
What?
He just chose like a funny random nickname.
That movie. It's been a while since I've seen.
No, I don't think it really has anything to do with the movie. I just think
I'm annoyed.
Just
I thought
like,
he was Jewish.
Nah, dude. Like Paul Craig is just straight up.
Paul Craig is like almost a Jewish name.
Yeah. Nah, he's just Scottish. I mean, like. Oh yeah, did I say there was conflict in Ireland?
Yeah, because I don't know what you're talking about.
I definitely meant like Scotland. But anyways, there was, I don't know. Anyway, so moral of the story is that. The non-Jew, bear Jew, Paul Craig.
Non-bear, non-Jew.
The man bear pig. versus Jamal Hill.
Cereal.
Paul Craig versus Jamal Hill. I mean.
Sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams are made of these. And
sweet
who am I to disagree?
Made of these.
This
who
is gonna
am
be.
To disagree.
We're gonna see some blood, no matter who wins. I mean, because if Paul Craig wins, you know he's taking a beating first, and if Jamal Hill wins, you know he's laying out a beating on Paul Craig. So it's like, no matter what, Paul Craig gets beat up. It's just whether he wins or loses.
If Paul Craig wins, it's all about Jamal Hill gassing out. And I, at least from what I saw from Jamal Hill's last fight, with OSP. He's willing to be patient and he's willing to take a couple shots to figure out his game plan and get in there. And what I've seen constantly from Paul Craig is like him rushing forward and like within 30 seconds getting rushed backwards and toppling over on his back and just like waiting for people to jump into his guard.
Yo, it's like a crazy game plan because it fucking works, right? Like, how crazy? How many triangle chokes does this guy have
too
as
many.
A light heavyweight? Who the fuck else gets triangle chokes as a light heavyweight? I think these guys really just don't know the defense because, like, who is 205 pounds but has the flexibility to throw up a triangle?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess to make this fight maybe one of the more quicker ones to go through, I like Jamal Hill. He should probably win, but like we discussed off camera, the line is so wide. At minus 310, it's over 75% implied win probability, which means he's got to win 8 out of 10 times for us to profit. What? It's just, it's too many. It just is.
Yeah.
So the line should be minus 225, minus 215. Or something like that. It's way too wide. And as much, and again, when Jamal Hill flatlines him in round one, his minus 300 is going to, should be minus 3000, right? Like what, like we always say, but
yeah.
I don't know. Paul Bear Jew Craig by submission at plus 550. That's a, it's egregious. That's nuts. That's literally nuts.
So it's real simple. Paul Craig has 4 losses in the UFC. One of them was by submission to Jim Crute in the 3rd round. Okay, that's not happening here. His other 3 losses, 1st round knockouts to Tyson Pedro, Khalil Roundtree, and Alonzo Metafield. I feel like that might be a little bit of a trap because, like you said, Hill is a little bit more patient. Hill's knockouts, you know, he does have one in the 1st round against Clitson Abreu, which technically didn't happen. the weed.
So he's got
OSP
he's got
round
two. Versus, he's got two in since coming to the UFC in the 2nd round, though.
Right. So, okay. I mean, you know, I could see where Hill 1st round plus 200 or round 1 or 2 minus 105. But honestly, I mean, like, you want to talk about paths to victory? Paul Craig by submission is plus 550. That's the only fucking way he wins. Like, I mean, is that not worth, like, if you don't feel comfortable in Hill and you feel like that Paul Craig had some kind of way to do it.
Well,
and
listen,
I'm telling you, I'm not playing this.
The only other thought,
I'm not playing
the it. Only other thought, which is just as crazy, if not crazier, is Paul Craig by decision plus 750, which... which maybe he wins round one and then till and then round two Hill comes back or whatever, and then round three, like, he's just gassed and then Craig can sit on top of him or something. Like,
yeah,
that's, you know, that's what you're really hoping for. But at the end of the day, Craig is not comfortable striking, is not a good offensive wrestler, and doesn't even, like, I don't know, maintain pressure well. Like, he just wants to get, yeah, like, throw up triangles from his back.
So Paul Craig is going to get beat up, but who's going to win? Simpson, it's going to be Jamahal Hill.
He likes this Homer Simpson approach, which is literally just keep punching me until you're tired, and then maybe I'll have a chance to finish you then. So yeah, I like Hill here. I think him beating OSP was absolutely huge, because OSP is, I don't know, he's somebody where you may worry about how much he cares fight to fight, but he's legit in his skill set. So to standing KO him is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really knocks out OSP.
Yeah, it was a standing TKO, but I mean, that was, OSP was exhausted. It was the first time he had ever missed weight in his career. But yeah, it was still impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, listen, sounds like we're taking Hill.
Yeah.
But if you want to go crazy, go ahead. I mean, I'm not going to do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. So next fight, step up. We got Damian Maia versus Bilal Muhammad. This is Muhammad's first fight back since being eye gouged. I'm curious if he's going to wear contacts like he always does, and is technically illegal, but I'm sure didn't contribute positively to the
That's
eyebrow.
Illegal.
Yeah, what come on, the, bro. I'm
what
the
was
police.
The line in this fight when it opened up? I feel like it's gotten closer.
And that's because it most certainly has.
Bilal Muhammad is now minus 230. Wasn't he like minus 350? Or am I on complete drugs?
I mean, it was minus 245 when I took it earlier in the week, so I'm feeling a little bit stupid. Right. He's first leg in my parlay here, the big parlay of the day, Bilal Muhammad. I think it's pretty simple as far as how this fight goes, as far as, like, what we can expect here. You know, 2021, like we've been saying, hasn't been the kindest, or, you know, even the end of 2020. In fact, Damian Maia, the man that had never been knocked out in his career, kicked off the pandemic era with a knockout loss to Gilbert Burns.
Right.
So that was first crazy. Knockout in his career.
That was crazy.
Now, I don't think Bilal Muhammad, the king of the decision, comes out and knocks out anybody here. Let's not get crazy. And he's not submitting Damian Maia, so cross that off your list of crazy things to happen. So, finally, you know, it's Bilal Muhammad decision or Damian Maia by submission.
Yeah.
And maybe Maia gets a decision. Maybe he can.
Damian Maia
wrestling.
By decision is plus 600. And by submission
it's just like,
is plus 420.
You know, he's not going to win the striking battle against Muhammad.
No.
Unless something is really wrong with Muhammad. He's just shown big strides as far as his overall striking game. Leon Edwards is a huge step up, so I don't think it's fair to judge his performance there. And Damian Maia is not Bilal Muhammad in the striking. However, Bilal Muhammad can't be sleeping on the grappling. If you really feel Maia, you have to play him by sub here. The line's like plus 380 or something. I mean, but yeah, so I felt confident enough that Bilal Muhammad is defensively sound, a very good wrestler. The guys that he struggled with have been the big power strikers, the ones that put him on watch as far as defensively. And I don't think he faces that same type of threat here, although you don't want to underrate Damian Maia's work on the feet. You know, it's impressive for who he is as a grappler, but Muhammad's faced much better opponents on the feet. So it's Muhammad's decision or Maia's submission. I'm personally just taking Muhammad. I'm going to parlay out his money line. It's even a little bit better price for you guys right now, and if you wait a little longer, it might get even better. Bilal Muhammad, first leg of my parlay. I think the guy gets it done. He is going to be slightly shorter, same reach, 11 years younger. It's time to say goodbye to some of our old veterans. Maia, you know, seems to admit that this could be his last fight. It's never the best of signs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Bilal is that every time he's taken the big step up, he's been unable to make that leap. Jeff Neal, Vicente Luque. So this is it's at least a big step up in terms of a name. So he listen, Maya could have one last trick up his sleeve, but Bilal should be able to come out here, be the quicker fighter, be the busier fighter, use his pace and his cardio to control this fight, and use his wrestling to be able to keep Maya from taking him down. I expect Maya to continue to spam takedowns. And, yeah, Bilal could get that very elusive finish that he never seems to get. Damian's taken, whatever it is, 13 months off since that crazy knockout by Burns. So, yeah, I expect Damian to come out and give a show, probably his last show. So I do like Bilal Muhammad by decision plus 110. I think the fact that you can even get that plus money is crazy.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid play. Like I said, I mean, that's one of the two ways I see the fight playing out. It sounds like we're in agreement. And, you know, I hope Maya at least makes a good impression of himself if this is his last fight.
Yeah, and if it is, it's been an honor watching him. He's, you know, one of the best guys to, you know, never win a UFC title, right? I mean, just, when you look at who he's fought, man, his losses are just to, I mean, Anderson Silva, Nate Marquardt, Chris Weidman, Jake Shields, Rory McDonald, Tyron Woodley, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman. I mean, yeah, a 2005 ADCC loss to Jacare Souza. The guy's a beast. He's been there with everybody. Triangle choke win over Chael Sonnen. So,
yeah. All right. Well, here we are. And this is pretty groundbreaking for this next fight. This is the first time we've had a non-co-main event, non-title fight be a five-rounder, right?
Yeah, first ever.
And who better than Leon Edwards versus Nathan Diaz?
Yeah, they might need all five for this one.
They very well could, especially given the propensity of Mr. Once again, another decision master, Leon Edwards. Two knockouts, one submission, seven decision wins in his career. His only two losses have come by decision, and to Kamaru Usman and Claudio Silva, a couple good names, especially back in 2015 and 2014 when he lost. I mean, this guy's on a huge streak. Technically ended with his no contest to Bilal Muhammad, but this would be his ninth, you know, win in a row if he is to get it against Nate Diaz. I mean, 15-10 in the UFC and 20-12 overall record. This guy's been around. Four knockouts, 15 submissions, four decisions. I do think Leon's wrestling and defensive capabilities make it highly unlikely that we see a submission for Nate. And like you said, we could see a fight that goes a long time here. I'm excited.
I expect Nate Diaz to come in, be rejuvenated. I expect him to look much better than he looked in that Jorge Masvidal fight. That fight could have ended in that first round. I mean, holy smokes, did he put it on him. It all started with a clinch. They were in the clinch, and as they broke from the clinch, Masvidal hit him with a cracking elbow, and it just sent Nate flying. And he started going crazy and kind of like ducked down to level change. And that's when he hit him with that head kick. I mean, it went really bad really quickly for Diaz, who then ended up saying that, you know, they kind of made him take the fight quickly, which, I mean, they did. It was literally 3 months after the Pettis fight, which the Pettis fight was like a war. And even still, that doesn't necessarily look that great in hindsight, because we know that Pettis, I don't know, he just isn't the same anymore. You know, he pulled out of PFL and is, you know, for the fight tonight, and you know, hasn't looked great. So, you know, Diaz coming off the bench here at 36, while I do expect him to be rejuvenated, like I said, and you know, the fight being canceled a month ago is still interesting.
right? Him having to pull out from that. I still think that that's an interesting narrative coming into this.
Yeah, not much talked about. Good call.
And Leon's a fucking beast, man. He's lots of feints, lots of pressure. We say this a lot, and a lot of people, because a lot of people do it, but he is absolutely incredible at switching stances. He might be one of the best. He is extremely technical, extremely defensive. The biggest thing that I think has maybe been his weakness that we've seen is his ability to be controlled in the clinch. But I don't really see Diaz doing too much of that. He really likes to box more. And if you try to box with Edwards, he's just going to switch stances and piece you up and circle out. And it's very possible that it actually doesn't go the distance. It's very possible they don't need it. But the problem is that Leon doesn't put any pressure into his strikes, any power into his strikes, I should say. Doesn't put much power into his strikes because he's more focused on his cardio. And he never risks the biscuit. He's very calm. He's very cerebral. He will not risk a loss or putting himself in danger just to, quote unquote, put on a show or make a statement.
So that's interesting. I mean, I guess the one thing I say is not going to happen is Nate Diaz is not going to lose by submission here. And the other thing that's not going to happen is that Nate Diaz is probably not going to win. So my bet to add to my parlay, very expensive right now, sitting at minus 440. Leon Edwards by knockout or by points. I mean, it just seems so clear. We're talking about someone that's so skilled. Nate, he can get cut up with an elbow. That scar tissue is terrible. Leon throws that left elbow coming out of the clinch. Whenever someone starts boxing Leon, he clinches up with them. It's bound to happen. Are the doctors going to stop it? Is Nate fully recovered? His eye looks puffed up like a motherfucker. I'm not going to lie. I saw that right away on Embedded. Made me a little nervous as far as that goes. So I didn't want to play Leon decision. I did a double chance. It's pretty cut and dry to me. Nate Diaz is being used as a name. Seems like he's near the end of his UFC contract. And
is that true? How much do you have left in his contract?
I'm not sure, but I heard him talking about possibly testing free agency. So,
wow, I mean, that's crazy.
It sounds like he's getting the bag here. He's always been a huge name for the UFC. Who knows where it goes from here? If he gets the win, he gets the title shot. Let's be realistic. Which is kind of crazy, but I mean, I think whoever wins this fight gets a title shot. I really don't think Colby gets it. That's a conversation.
I think Dana White said that Colby's getting it, but that's a different
thing. Yeah, but Dana White says everything.
Yeah, that's true.
He also said fighters are getting a pension, right?
Well, no, he said that he responded. I read that.
Yeah, I know, but it's bullshit.
Yeah. I hear you.
So, anyways, save that for another day. sounds like we're pretty well decided.
Listen,
I mean, it's going to be fun.
I agree, and I don't want to tip our hand too far the other direction. I get scared when I see Brendan Schaub's, you know, picks, and it's an odds boost on DraftKings. Izzy, Figgy, and Bilal all to win, boosted plus 210. That scares me.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say. If you want to talk about odds boost and looking at, oh, what do they want money on? Some of the odds boosts hit and some of them don't. So do I think that one hits? I think there actually is a good chance that one hits.
Because then the other, there's three more.
Yeah.
There's three more, just to cover them really quickly. There's three more. Hooper and Frivola both to win. So it's very possible that one of those.
I think both could lose.
Exactly. Vittori, Adesanya not to go the distance. We'll talk about that one. And Jamal Hill versus Paul Craig and Firas Ziem versus Luigi Vendramini, both to go under. And we kind
of
both
said that we might see a decision in one of those.
Right. So if not both, because
because
people think that the finish is coming in both of them. So
that tells you all you need to know. One of these is going to hit. I feel good about the parlay. I feel good about the parlay one hitting.
No, your part, yeah, the parlay one sounds interesting. I might even play that.
Yeah, see, the reason I'm not going to, you'll hear the third leg of my parlay, and then I have a separate bet for the main event. So, yeah, I wasn't too sure. I was thinking of cashing out that bet, but we'll get to that. So anyways, we were pretty well decided here. Let's get to our first rematch. The first of our two title fights. The first of the two reasons why you decided to fly out and go be part of this crazy, historic UFC 263. Yeah, Davison Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno.
It's true. It's true. This is so exciting. That first fight was an absolute barn burner. Took place for both guys 3 weeks after they had just fought. Davidson had just defended his title versus Alex Perez with an incredible round one guillotine choke. And Moreno had the incredible victory versus Brandon Royval, where Royval had the shoulder injury at the end of the round.
Yeah, and listen, both these guys came in, had an absolute war. You know, the narrative is out that Figueiredo had a stomach bug, that he didn't have as much power in the first fight. I will say, in the grappling exchanges, it did look like he didn't have his normal strength. So maybe I'm buying a little bit in too much to what the people are talking about, but for a big guy like Figueiredo cutting weight twice in a short period of time, you know, Moreno seems like one of those guys that has a little bit of an easier time making 125, even though he's slightly taller. He's not as, like, jacked and cut up, so I think Figueiredo cuts a lot more to make the weight, and having this fight a lot further away from the first one, I think that is definitely an advantage in Figueiredo's favor. However, Moreno now knows what it feels like to get hit by Figueiredo, and he's had 6 more months to prepare a game plan for his style, which is definitely difficult. However, if we look back at Figueiredo's last time he had a rematch, Benavidez, not quite Brandon Moreno at this stage of his life. And he got embarrassed on both stages. So, you know, Figueiredo, in his own right, is a very smart tactical opponent. Sounded from the embeds like he was focusing a lot on his jiu-jitsu this camp. He did get out-grappled a little bit by Moreno, but he did show the ability to use the butterfly hooks and get back up and really get back to work. It's just that he couldn't really dominate the grappling exchanges like he normally does. I think some of that will have to do with the strength. And, yeah, I don't see this playing out too differently from the first one as far as stylistically. I just think that there's a higher probability for there to be a finish due to just that, like, everything doesn't always play out the same way it did like the first time.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I don't think it goes the distance. I mean, I do. I think that it's possible that Figueiredo can get that finish. It's just, the problem is you really can't play Figueiredo until you see him weigh in.
That's true, but did I already do it? Oopsies.
You did?
To close out my parlay, the third leg, I placed this pretty early in the week, like I said, so I might have not even gotten the best value here because I got minus 250, and yeah, I mean, right now it's minus 230, so in this sense, I lost a little value on my parlay, but at plus 140, the three legs, Leon Edwards double chance, knockout or points, and Figueiredo.
I don't really know how Moreno gets it done. He's like, I really don't. He's not going to out wrestle him. He has to clip him. He has to clip Figueiredo.
Yeah. Or hope that, you know, Figueiredo doesn't have a gas tank. But he went five last time.
He went last time when he was sick.
I don't know.
And let's be real, he should have won if it wasn't for the groin strike.
Right. And, damn, I mean, Figueiredo, the way I see it here is that he has just a high-level ability to finish. And I think he's going to have learned from the first fight that you don't get the finish by going for the head of Moreno. You get it by going to the body. And we saw the biggest reactions of the whole fight from Moreno come when he was getting hit to the body. And I think that the kicks of Figueiredo are going to be much more potent this time, teeps and everything. And then I also think that he's going to try to wear into that gas tank with a little bit more of a grappling approach and be searching for his own finish. I mean, Moreno has one loss by submission, but he's never been knocked out before. Is it possible that Figueiredo's hunting more in that direction this time? He's got 7 submissions on his record and 3 in the UFC. I wouldn't rule it out. And, you know, even though I have the straight money line play on Figueiredo, you know, right now, decision, you know, that seems to be what everyone is agreeing on as the play. But right now, if you look at submission is plus 750 for Figueiredo, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's 750.
Plus 750. If you're going to play a prop on this fight, and from my end, I mean, maybe I'm obsessed with submission props if you guys listen enough.
Yeah,
I mean,
you definitely are. But I do
think. But, like, that's not.
What I like, and I think if you're crazy enough to do it, I think you just laid out a pretty good reason why you can remove KO from the equation, whether it's because he's not focused on it and Brandon has never been finished before by KO. But if you do feel ballsy enough to do it, double chance. Figueiredo by submission or decision, plus 150.
Yeah, that's another solid play right there, and you're getting plus money and taking out the least likely of the outcomes. So I definitely agree with something like that.
You know, a KO, ground and pound, clipping, it's definitely possible, but I don't know. Moreno hasn't been finished before, and you saw him eat a ton of strikes. So
definitely. Well, hey, I think we did it. I think we agreed on Figueiredo, and that brings us to our main event of the evening. And it was definitely a little bit of a humbling experience. The move up to light heavyweight, Adesanya losing to Jan Blachowicz, and getting outstruck by Jan Blachowicz from distance. And when I say a humbling experience, I don't mean for Adesanya. I meant for me.
I hope it was humbling for Adesanya.
No, of course. And I think it was. I think he really took it the right way. He accepted his loss. And from everything that I've seen, all the episodes of Embedded and just him in the gym in general, Adesanya's been definitely working on his grappling. I feel that Blachowicz had, like, you know, a little bit of, like, size that he could bring to the table. And he almost matched the reach of Adesanya as well. But that brings us to this matchup. Israel Adesanya now 20-1 versus Marvin Vettori at 17-3-1. A rematch again. I think this is the third one on this card.
Yes, it is.
Adesanya in this fight, however, is going to have a 4-inch height advantage, which might be a little exaggerated. It could be closer to, like, 2 or 3 inches. But the reach advantage is not exaggerated. 80 inches to 74. I mean, Adesanya in his prime at 31. Vettori 27, up and coming. Vettori comes in on an impressive win streak. He has 2 submissions and 5 decisions in the UFC. Someone that, you know, probably isn't going to be looking to knock you out. And
he's got pillow hands. He has absolutely no. Can we just be honest?
Yes.
If he hits me, like, let's be honest, I'm going to sleep. Come on. Yes. I'm curling up right away. I got glasses on my face. I got a giant nose. I don't want to take any punches. But in terms of a UFC fighter and in terms of a middleweight, 185, this man has no power. None. Zero. So while in the last fight, Jan, Polish power, is 200 pounds power, right? It's different. There's levels to this. And that threat of the power is not here. And the threat of the size is not the same. The biggest thing that comes to my mind, the scariest thing of this fight for me, is that third round of their first fight. Anybody that's watched their fight should be well aware of that third round. It's the one thing that Marvin Vettori is holding on to. It's the one thing that, you know, caused the judges to really make it a split decision. I mean, he grinded him out. I mean, it was like a Jan Blachowicz. Like, I kind of wish I would have studied that fight a little bit harder because it would have been more obvious to pick Jan. Like, it just would, like, I mean, again, and we're such big Izzy fans that, like, you know, we kind of get blinded and it just what it is. And we live and we learn from that. Like, you know, like I've learned from losing money on McGregor to Poirier. I mean, we've all had these fights. I lost money on Max Holloway versus Dustin Poirier. I mean, we've had, there's been a lot of these fights where you're betting on your favorite guy. I think that Izzy will have made the changes, because otherwise it's really as simple as it's blood in the water and he's as weak as he could possibly be right now, or as vulnerable, I should say. And this is a legacy fight. This is so important because that Romero fight sucked, and the Costa fight, I think Costa personally is probably the most overrated fighter in the UFC. And then, you know, you lose to Jan in the big step up. And there's no shame in that. But now you have to come out and you have to solidify your title with probably the biggest win since winning the title versus Whittaker.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so things that Vettori might have improved since the first fight. I think footwork, cardio. He does check kicks like slightly better now. Not that I think he's great at it, but there's at least an effort. But I don't think he's really improved his ability to not overreact to feints. He also hasn't really improved his combinations and striking patterns. It's a lot of 1-2s, straight lefts. You know, I thought Hermanson's performance was impressive in the fact that he went all five and was able to win four rounds. But, I mean, the dude slowed down and Hermanson slowed down too. I don't think Izzy slows down in that regard. I don't think Izzy gets knocked down in the first round, you know? Izzy is going to win this fight.
At a distance. He was unable to after two rounds the first time. What happens later on? Like, what happens if Marvin starts holding him against the cage? We all know what's going to happen if it stays a kickboxing fight.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And listen, the one thing that is apparent about Marvin Vettori, the dude has got a blockhead.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's easy to knock him out. It was interesting that Adesanya lands that one elbow and Vittori's pointing to his eye like he gets poked. And that legitimately hurt him. So that was interesting because that was the first chink in the armor I saw. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Vettori finished at some point. I just don't think it comes early at all. I think it would have to be because he's gassed out on top of getting hit. And that's going to come from a couple of rounds of trying to wrestle.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we saw in the Holland fight, I wasn't impressed with his work on the top. Like, he did a great job holding Holland there, but he didn't land any strikes. And also, I mean, Holland wasn't showing the most impressive get-ups, although he had, like, you know, improved from the Brunson fight. It still wasn't good. And I don't think you could really put too much stock into the grappling cardio of Vettori holding down a guy that's a fish out of water in Holland. And so Adesanya has at least shown improved submission ability, and like Jan was able to get him down twice or even the third time. But it wasn't that he was able to get there early, and he was only able to get there because he was winning the striking battle against Adesanya. And he was only able to do that because of his size, his reach.
And he was only able to do that because he was in the octagon, right, with him.
Right. No, but listen, Vettori, I just don't think he matches up physically, and you know, being a middleweight,
that because his parents genetically
Polish power, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's, for me, it's Adesanya and over 2.5.
Yeah.
I have it in for a big fat $100 at -109. And honestly, I might have put that in too early because pretty sure there's a little bit more value on that now. So the times where, you know, I normally don't get out ahead and bet myself early, you know,
sometimes it helps.
Like,
sometimes
now it's +100. So
where is that? +100 where?
On PointsBet.
PointsBet.
I did win a huge bet on basketball. So I told myself I wasn't going to bet on the Adesanya fight just because of my fandom. So take that for what you will, that I won like $1,000 and said I'll throw like 100 on my favorite fighter. You know, I think Adesanya wins. Would I be completely shocked if Vettori gets the wrestling win and all that? I mean, maybe not completely shocked.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd be surprised. But if Vettori comes out there and starches Adesanya or gets a submission, yeah, I'm completely shocked.
I kind of would be.
If you're taking Vettori, do a decision.
I'd be kind of happy for Robert Whittaker, though, honestly, because I think Robert Whittaker absolutely crushes Marvin Vettori. I don't think Marvin Vettori has a like, it's just styles make matchups. So like the threat of the takedown is 0.0% against Robert Whittaker. You're not taking him down. You're not getting inside. Like, it's just not happening.
Right. So, but it's like, if you beat Israel Adesanya, it's either Adesanya's damaged goods or Vettori is good enough to potentially beat Whittaker, because he would have had to make some strides on the feet to even get inside Adesanya.
Not necessarily.
Well, in the third round, his footwork and striking were much better to set up the takedown.
Izzy was like tired. I don't know where Izzy's training was at that point.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it was only Izzy's second UFC fight compared to like Marvin's, third, fourth, fifth. Like, yeah, it was a lot less, you know, shocking to see Izzy be a little bit better at grappling going forward and defending some takedowns. And it does look like he came in pretty strong.
He looked pretty jacked
to this camp. Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I saw in the first fight Vettori definitely had a strength advantage, and now that Adesanya went up, you know, not all the way to 205, you know, he's only like one, you know, a little bit lower than that, but I think coming back down, he definitely seems to have kept some of that muscle. So I'm interested to see him in these clinch exchanges, because that is where he does some good work. Shout out Dan Tom for talking about his capabilities and defensive work. He does it best against the fence. So that's where Vettori likes to work himself, because he doesn't necessarily get these takedowns in the open. And once again, you know, shout out Dan Tom for that detail.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Marvin, while he's gotten a lot better, like you said, I do think that there's still some holes. His striking, his combination striking, you know, it's just, you know, there are some things to be left to be desired. It is possible that he can grind him out into the later rounds, but if you're Izzy, you have to be so ready and so prepared for that. It would be just the biggest. Just the biggest mistake, and just you would just get laughed at, I think, on some level, if he's really not ready, if he really gets, you know, sat on for 15 minutes or something. Like, I think that would be absolutely crushing to his reputation.
So that does it. Definitely an extended version of Triple C. Really got into the conversation.
I felt a little rusty coming in here. I'm glad that everybody listened. You know, obviously missing last week was really tough, and I definitely apologize for that. I'm really happy to be back now, and we're really off and rolling now. Though we don't really miss a beat for a while, so I know I'm gonna just focus on keeping it up, keeping it going, and being consistent. So I thank you for being my partner through all this, and I thank everybody for continuing to listen, because you know, we do it because it's fun. We don't do it for the money.
That's right. And hey, listen, you made it this far. Let's give you what those plays that we had were. For me, I dropped a few early in the week this time. They were my most confident. I didn't want to let, you know, second thinking get the best of me. So Collier, straight up.
Agreed.
Lauren Murphy, straight up.
Agreed.
Then Dawodu, 2.5 times what I bet on Murphy and Collier, straight up. Then as far as favorites go, We have our big parlay. I got Bilal Muhammad. I got Edwards double chance KO or decision. And I got Davis and Figueiredo money line. That comes to plus 140. Got a fat hundo on that. And then we got Adesanya over 2.5 rounds and the win. Fat hundo on that, minus 109. So let's hope I cash on some of those. If not, going to be a sad boy. But thank you for the basketball winnings for keeping me afloat.
Yeah, I can dig it. I'm pretty much with you on all of those. I think I like the ZM Luigi fight to go the distance. Maybe Alexis Davis, probably not. We love Dawodu.
And of course, your favorite, Drew Dober.
Drew Dober. So I was just kind of throwing something a little bit together because you had such a nice saucy parlay. How about Drew Dober money line and Leon Edwards double chance KO or decision? So you get Leon Edwards by decision or KO, and Drew Dober money line. You get that at plus 105. Little double your money situation. And of course, Izzy. I like your Izzy over 2.5. So,
and you could get a plus 100 now. I'm the sucker at minus 109. but yeah, hey, glad being back. And Guru, take it away.
Oh, thank you all so much for listening. If you've made it this far, we appreciate everything that you do to support our channel, which I hope is subscribing to our YouTube page, liking and commenting on our videos, sharing them around to your friends. Look for us wherever you listen to podcasts, which hopefully is either Spotify, Apple, or Google. We are on all three. Make sure you subscribe to those podcasts on those apps so you get our new episodes the moment they drop. While you're listening, liking, and subscribing, feel free to give us a 5-star rating and some feedback. Follow at Chronic Combat on Twitter and at Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram. You can follow my awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And you can follow me, the_MMA Guru, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will see you next week for UFC Vegas 29. Korean Zombie versus Dan Ige. 13 bouts, and I'm excited for that one, but I don't even want to look too far ahead because 263 is right on the horizon. So thanks so much for tuning in.